Today I'm joined by Frank Sicardi, also known as Cyborg Prime, with Cyborg Prime Games. Frank, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Frank Sicardi. I'm a independent content creator and author and programmer and multimedia artist guy.
Renaissance man.
Yeah, I do lots of different things. Yeah, that's me. I run some YouTube channel and role-playing game expansions and stuff like that. My favorite game's Traveller. So that's me.
Yeah, how'd you get into RPGs and then how'd you get into Traveller? Were they the same moment?
No, kind of. All right, so how I got in RPGs was some kids at my school. I guess it must have been, let's see, seventh or eighth grade, so probably 12 or 13. And well, I moved to New Mexico, and there was like this little hobby shop, and I remember going in there, and they had like the D&D, the old school ugly idol with the eye, prying the jewel out of the eye, Dungeon Master's Guide and stuff. And I remember seeing that there and being fascinated by it, but it was, like a $30 book or $25 book at the time, and I was just a kid, so there's no way I was going to be able to get into that. But thankfully, at school, one of the kids invited me to play D&D, and so I started playing D&D, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. But I like science fiction more. So when Gamma World came out, I grabbed that up, and I was like obsessed with that for a long time. So D&D to Gamma World. Then let's see, after Gamma World, I probably got more into like superheroes, like champions. And then that's about the time, that was probably, I was in middle high school then, and that's about the time I got into Traveller. I'd seen tra again. I moved to Santa Fe from Taos, where I originally landed in New Mexico, and went to another independent hobby shop, and I saw the Traveller box set there. And being a sci-fi freak, I was very interested into it. But again, being like kid, and it was out of my reach. But I always was interested in it. One of my friends had a friend who actually had the box set, and he had just moved here from Texas. And so we all got together, and my friend Nathan, he's still around, he's on my Discord, just he goes under the name of Penroth. Anyway, he was the first Traveller GM, and so then I was hooked on Traveller, and I loved it. And I think I either inherited, or maybe I inherited the first couple of books, and then slowly I started putting my Traveller kit together.
And you were running the little black books,
Yeah, the
the
little
first
black
edition.
books. Yeah, but I always like to like stay current on whatever the current edition is. So my favorite edition has always been the current edition. when
It's the
Classic
shiniest,
came
right?
out, yeah, right. So when Classic came out, that was my favorite edition, and then Mega Traveller, and then Traveller 4, and all the different versions. And yeah, it's a cool game. I spent a lot of time making planets and characters and stuff. And so, but by that time in high school, I was pretty much once I started GMing, I was always the GM, and I never really played again until
Yeah.
recently. So yeah, that's kind of weird, but
So
that's
you
how.
actually had an interesting poll up about Traveller that you put out on your YouTube channel this week.
Oh, yeah, which one?
What's your favorite aspect of Traveller?
Oh, yeah.
And currently the community's almost unanimous in exploration, but I'm curious what your response is.
I like the role playing and storytelling. So somebody made a point that, isn't that in all of the aspects? And I guess, yeah, it is. But the poll was really like, what's your favorite? So, but,
Right.
no, I like the storytelling. I guess that's why I'm always the GM. Plus, if like I've always been in the position, like if I didn't GM, there'd be no game. So,
Do you
that's just
approach
how.
it from like the classic like sci-fi literature perspective of like, hey, there's like a big question that we're going to explore, or
Yeah,
you know, there's
usually. Well, I kind of It depends on like what the crew wants to do, really. But my games tend to be like episodic. Like each adventure is maybe like a one or two session sub adventure in the overall story arc. So what I'm trying to kind of do is like kind of get that flavor of the like just an episodic, like Star Trek, or a sci-fi show where every week there's a cliffhanger, and one kind of feeds into the next. That's something I noticed that like Voyager did. If Voyager got messed up in a battle in one episode, it was still that way in the next episode. So they like they had these like episodic stories, but like this overall cohesive and continuous arc that like had internal cohesion, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so that's what I try to do in my games. I'll have an adventure that's like a one or two session adventure that's part of the overall campaign.
Yeah, no, I dig that. And it's funny you mentioned the Star Trek stuff because we are 24 hours away from second edition of Star Trek Adventures dropping too.
Oh yeah.
So I'll be taking a look at that. But we'll see. I picked up all the first edition stuff on a fire sale.
I love that stuff. Any kind of like sci-fi game. I like I like both Star Wars and Star Trek, but Star Trek kind of came first for me, and that's what I like the most.
Yeah.
I don't dislike any, even like the cheesiest bad sci-fi movie, I still try to give it a chance because I like sci-fi. And I want them to make more, even if it's bad.
I mean,
Give
it
a
all comes
shot.
out of the pulps originally,
Yeah,
right? And
right.
like that was always a mixed bag. So
Right.
it fits. What are the major themes that are going on in your current campaign?
My players have gotten involved with like organized crime, or not involved with organized crime. They're crosswise with organized crime. They've been like meddling in their business. They found an alternate way of traveling around the subsector without having to use jump. But they're keeping it a super duper secret, and they're super paranoid about, of course, like if that gets in the wrong hands. They have the first adventure was Death Station, and they ended up leaving there with some samples of what was going on in their lab. And so they've kind of their doctor is a is like a country doctor, but he lives on this high tech ship, and he's really super smart. So he's trying to like reverse engineer combat drugs and stuff like that. And they go from place to place, and they buy up like rotten fruit that's going bad for real cheap prices. They have a still in their cargo bay, and so they're not murder hobos. They're space drunks, I guess, or
Yeah,
I
moonshiners in
don't know.
space.
So drunks in space. Well, that's what the pilot is anyway, and the others are just supporting him. The doctor actually owns the ship, so they've had just like epic adventures. They unleashed an ancient war machine. They've crossed the space crime lords. They've explored the strange nebulas. They've been thrown into penal colonies and judged by disembodied brains. Let's see. Yeah, just all kinds of weird stuff.
I don't know. It sounds like it's the running the gamut of traveler. So that's exactly what you want to see.
Yeah.
So
We just do whatever the players seem to think is interesting, So at the end of each session, I'll go, what did you guys have fun? Yeah, okay, what are you thinking about doing next? And then they'll go, oh, well, we want to get more capacity on our still or whatever. And so then I'll have to go like look up like that stuff. Actually, I make them do all the homework. If they want to brew beer or whatever space cordials, Oh, here's the thing, is they found a place where there are time and gravity distortions, and so they've figured out a way through a chain of skills how to like fire put their cask of booze in a drone and fire it into these warp spaces and age it and then bring it back aged without destroying their ship, because it's in this like maelstrom of like bad place. And so they do it. The pilot holds the ship steady, and then the drone guy fires the drone and gets it on target, and then the science guy monitors the aging process, and then sometimes they're firing it into a backwards pocket, and they bring back just a bucket of seeds or something, or it just falls apart, the drone falls apart, and they wasted the whole thing. So it's kind of fun when
That's
everybody gets to, do their own, their contribute their part to the chain of to the task chain. I don't know if a lot of traveler GMs do that. I guess they do. It's kind of part of the game, but that's something I don't see in other games like D&D. I don't see like, the wizard does the, this, and then the dwarf does his engineering role, and then
ooh.
it's this Rube Goldberg machine of like what everybody did together. You know what I mean?
Fourth edition, I think, took a crack at it.
Did they?
And I think, yeah, because there was like a chaining mechanic to it, but it did not stick around in that form for fifth edition. But no, I love it. It's like playing with time dilation and the movie Interstellar, except everyone's down on the planet and they shoot the cask up into space. Like, and then it comes back 21 years later, perfectly aged. Love it. So how did you make the jump from player or GM to business owner producing stuff for sale to the community?
Well, when I moved to New Mexico, I was 11, and I moved here from a big city into like rural area, and there's nothing to do. And I didn't know a lot of kids and stuff, and I was kind of like like an advanced student. So I found out that the school had a like an unused TRS-80 computer that nobody knew how to do anything with it, but it had all the books and stuff. So I would hang out during the lunch break or recess, excuse me, and I would read that book, and I taught myself programming. And so when it came later on, when I was like a teenager, I was already a professional programmer by the age of like 16. So I used to write utility programs for like how to decode things in D, like random tables in D&D. Top Secret was a big game that I love to play. It's like a 007 RPG. So I was like making random tables and having the computer like spit out like what putting things together, like all the different things you could put in your bow tie: poison dart, voice changer, gas mask, I don't know, different kinds of things. And then I would have these these utilities that I could just say, oh, these are the treasures you found, or whatever. You could find stuff like that over my website still. So little by little, I started building up like these libraries of computer things and my notes and stuff. And I always wanted to like actually like write for Traveler or do something for the Traveler company, or for whoever was doing it at the time. Man, I was late to the game. I found out about the Traveler open gaming license like 5 years after it was posted, and I kicked myself for never like realizing it or finding it or whatever sooner. I was like, this is my ticket to getting the stuff out of my head and out of my notebooks and into the world. And simultaneously, I live right now in Santa Fe. I live outside of city limits and kind of like around with horse fields and stuff around. But our being like that, it's country, and people don't always like fix their dogs and stuff. And so our neighbor had their dog had like a litter of eight pups, and it was like they were coming through the fence into our yard and playing with our dogs, and it was all fine and good, and I was running around and chasing and playing with them, and then I was like, oh God, I'm having a heart attack. And so I real after I recovered from that, I ended up with two of those puppies still live with me. I managed to the owner gave away two, and I gave away four and kept two. So anyway, when I was recovering, I was like, I can't go back to my computer job. It's too stressful. There's everybody that comes to you with a computer problem is having stress, and they dump that on you, and now you have stress. So, and if you have more than one customer, they're all doing that to you. And so that was a big contributor to, me having, well, I had just a, like a undiagnosed cholesterol problem, but the stress wasn't helping. So I was like, I gotta figure out something else to do. So a few years prior, I had written a computer book. When I when I see something that I want to have and it's not available, I make it. So like I wanted those like programs, and when they didn't have them, I made them. So I was getting into like making a massive online, massive multiplayer online role playing game with this engine called Realm Crafter that was available in the early, I don't know, it was probably the mid 2000s, like 2015. Anyway, that didn't have a manual. So I wrote a manual and I published it, and I enjoyed it, and I made some royalties off of it. And so I got kind of got bit with the writing bug. And I was like, what if I could parlay that into doing some writing now that's not so stressful? I could do it on my own time. And I could write about what I want. And I already have piles of stuff. And so like what, and I'm always thinking of gaming stuff when I like just throughout the day, I might see something and think it's funny, and then think about how you would do that in like the hero system, like, I don't know if you ever play Champions or Hero, but it's like a point-based system. It's like 5 points for every 1d6 of damage you want to do with a power, for instance, or, you buy your all your different superpowers, and you end up with like a maybe a 250 point character would be like a street level superhero. Anyway, so there's ways that you can just like put things together in a modular way to represent stuff in that game. And so whenever I see things like that, I put it together in my head. Anyway, so I have a lot of stuff like just brimming out that needs to get on paper or made into games or programs or something. So that's kind of how I ventured into it. I looked at the Open Gaming License. I went over to DriveThruRPG. I looked at like what people were selling. And I was like, I can do this or better. I have desktop publishing experience. I'm a multimedia artist. I have an art degree. So, I can do all the layouts and all the stuff myself. And so, and I had all the, my when I graduated, I have a weird history, but I actually taught 3D graphics and animation classes at the local community college, but didn't have a degree of it in it myself. And it wasn't until the college gave me credits for all the classes I taught that I accidentally formed a degree and they graduated. And this is only a few, like 5 or maybe 8 years ago. So, anyway, I had the skills and I had all the ability to do the stuff, and I figured I would just put some things together and see how they sold. So that's where the Starship malfunctions came from. And those, or, well, actually, the first things were random names. And so I did research all around the world about like common names in different areas and stuff. And I compiled them into, they're not just like random names spit. None of my stuff is like randomly spit out junk. It's all like research stuff into lists, and then the lists compiled and put together. So that started selling, and I was like, okay, well, let's keep going with this. And so I started making adventures for Roll20. I'm on the Roll20 marketplace. Then I started people started asking for deck plans, so I started making deck plans. So that's how I kind of got into the how I went from not a publisher to a publisher.
So with those modules or those adventures that you've created, is there one or two that you want to highlight, one that you're particularly proud of, or one that is best received?
There's only one published adventure. It's
Okay.
the Relic, and I'm proud of it because it's my first one that I published, and it's also like my first. It not only is it my first adventure that I published, but it's my first VTT adventure. So that was like a kind of a milestone for me. And my dog's barking. Let me go let her in. I'll be right back. So that's when I got interested in like or realized that like in addition to the adventure, well now people need ships. So I started making deck plans for all the classic ships. And I kind of I they're not exactly the same. I put my own spin on them. I kind of move things around. I made them fit. And then it was 'cause it was kind of weird. First I made one just for my personal use, and my players really liked it. I threw down like some furniture and everybody could grab a copy and put and decorate their own room. So everybody had like a different colored bed and a chair and a stool and a desk and a whatever they wanted in their room. The pilot who drinks a lot, he had a bar and a humidor for his cigars and a lounge chair and a TV. And then the doctor who's from a low-tech planet, he had a wooden desk and a log to sit on and a wooden stool or something and his like granny's comforter on his bed and stuff. And
Oh, they
so
got way into
everybody
it. I
got
love
to,
it.
yeah, everybody got to do their own flair. So if you go to my YouTube channel and you see any of those, like if you're looking into the Roll20 how tutorials or even the ship deck plans, you'll see their rooms actually decorated the way they wanted to. And the cool thing about that is like when you they have their still, so we put a still in the cargo section and you can see like how much room you still have left for other stuff. It ended up being more popular than I thought it would be. And so but my intention was to sell furnished and unfurnished versions. And that's what I ended up doing. But I wanted to sell like stylized furniture. Haven't gotten around to that yet. But I figured, for if people want to put in their own furniture, they can just go to Google and get top-down views of stuff and
Yeah.
copy paste it in there. But yeah, I would like to do like different like Star Trek style, Star Wars style, maybe like Firefly style, I don't know, different kinds of maybe alien, like industrial style, just so you can do different tech levels or whatever, or just different styles.
Yeah. And then I think there's a couple other things that we'll talk about in a little bit. Probably your ultimate guide to playing Mongoose. A couple of your coding projects. Where was it in your kind of journey as a publisher that you landed on the idea of running your own convention online? Was
Oh.
that
Well, I've always done a lot of work with nonprofits of various kinds, and I ended up in a historical medievalist society called the Society for Creative Anachronism. And I ended up moving up through the ranks until I was like the kingdom web minister. And so I put a lot of time and stuff into that, and I kind of got burnt out on it. And so I quit that, and I was like, well, what am I going to do with my time? I was feeling fidgety and weird, and my SCA birthday was May Day. That was my first event I ever went to. And so I was like, man, and I always used to host a May Day event, and now that I wasn't playing SCA anymore, I was like, what am I going to do on this May Day? So I was like, May Day, May Day. And then I told my friend, hey, we should do an event on May 1st. And he goes, why? And I said, a traveler event. And he goes, why? I said, because it's May Day, May Day. And then he was like, oh, okay. And so I decided I'd give it a shot. And so my channel was teensy weensy, but, and I wasn't nobody. So nobody, I didn't expect anything, but you never know until you try. So I put out a couple of invitations. I just started the Traveler RPG Headquarters Facebook group. So I put out some invitations there, and I wanted people to I wanted to promote Traveler because, like, I don't know if anybody's noticed, but there's no Traveler commercials anywhere. And so I was like, how do people even find out about this game? You know, I found out because it was in a hobby shop, but I've been to many, many hobby shops, and since then I've never seen it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to promote Traveler because that's the game I like. I'm going to invite some Traveler adjacent people. I'm not going to focus on any kind of addition. Whoever comes can come. And so I put out I invited Mark Miller, and he said yes. I invited some other folks and got some volunteers who were like Traveler adjacent, like CFES Engine people, and that's how the first event happened. I had event experience from hosting events in the SCA. So basically, and also doing I used to run master control at the community college's TV station when I was going to college, and I learned through there, you know, how to like feed your crew cheap on pizza, or how to call around to businesses and get them to donate prizes, gift certificates or whatever. And so that's what I did. I called up people and I said, hey, do you want to give away some of your own product as promotional stuff? Would you like to sponsor a drive-through RPG $10 gift certificate? Would you like to whatever? And people were like, yeah, hell yeah. And so that's what we did. So we started giving away prizes that were just promotional things that the interviewees were promoting. And and it was well received. I was surprised at how well received, actually.
Do you remember how many folks joined and played games and stuff that first year?
Not many.
Not many.
Not many.
But you're in your you're I think you just completed your sixth year,
Yeah,
correct?
just completed the 6 year. And this year we had like peaks of like 25 concurrent viewers and stuff like that, which is pretty big. But still, I mean, Traveler's the only, well, I guess there's Starfinder. But I mean,
But
Traveler.
you're running a couple different things though. You've got ongoing YouTube interviews, which is actually how we connected because I saw that one of your interviews was live. So you were talking with the who's who of all the writers and third-party publishers and everything. But then there's also gaming events you can sign up for, and
Right.
this year
Well,
was a
didn't
full weekend, right?
yeah. Well, it didn't start out that way. Originally, it started with just I think there was four interviews, then no gaming, other than, you know, what people did privately.
Okay.
And then we started adding things in, but they were added. It kind of happened organically. Like first, I think it was Patrick Canoose contacted me. He wanted to raise money for the Carcinoid Cancer Foundation, and so he had a way through gaming on Zoom where you could donate to the charity, and you could buy boons for your favorite character, or they would do their move in the voice of Christopher Walken, or like they would do like all kinds of like silly things or whatever. And so you could buy these things, and that's how they raised money. We ended up raising like $1,000 or something the first year, and then it just went up and up. And this last year we didn't was the first year we didn't do a charity. It's been pretty successful. And then another then after that another person came forward. That would be Greg Cares, and he wanted to host some online gaming. And I was like, okay, as long as I don't have to manage it, you can do whatever you want. And so he manages that aspect. And so we just like took these different add-ons and like plugged them on. And so now this last year was like the big after 6 years, I did 17 interviews.
Whoa.
And aired them all during the weekend. May Day was in the middle of the week, so we did gaming the weekend before. That was well attended, and I think everybody had a good time. The numbers, all my numbers on my YouTube and website are, all record breaking within our, to itself. And so that's good. And yeah, it's been well received. And I think folks have they contacted me on the side and asked me, hey, can I add this on? Or thank you for doing that. I just got back into Traveler, or I just found out about Traveler. And so that's been really, that kind of stuff's been really rewarding for me.
Have you seen a lot of new players use those game sessions as their entry point?
A lot have, and there's been some confusion, like, how do I play? How do I get involved with VTT? Do I ha you know do I have to spend money? The Traveler groups are usually, like, except for some grumpy grognards, everybody's really nice, and they'll help you out. So if you had a question, you can just call the GM and he'll walk you through it. And no, you don't have to spend money except for the registration fee, but that's just tabletop events is what they use to organize the games. So it's like a good way to you're selling seats at your at, n not selling seats, you're selling tickets to the convention, and then each activity, like a game session, or it could even be you could have the guest speaker or do workshops. And so to like reserve seats in those workshops, you go through this tabletop events thing. So that's what that's for. You don't host the games or anything through that. It's just the convention management software, if you will.
Yeah, making
So think
sure
of it
seats
just like a
are.
real one. You buy a badge and you get to go in and you get to go to the gaming hall and play as much as you want, and the games don't cost you anything. But if there's a guest speaker, maybe that guest speaker is free, or maybe the guest speaker has another $5 surcharge to go see them. So that can be also simulated in tabletop events.
Oh, that's super cool. And it handles seat reservations and things like that, so you don't overbook and or
Or if people drop out, it opens up that seat again, and the GM can list their game and what people should expect and how many players they want to have and what time it starts. And then usually you go to a third party place, like to there's a virtual online Traveler Discord, and they put out that hosts that, and they put out free tables for people to ha or virtual tables, and then the GMs go there and the players meet, and then they have their game. And sometimes it's just theater of the mind, and sometimes it's VTT, and sometimes it's just on Discord, or both, or all, or none. So it's kind of cool.
That's awesome. And you mentioned there was one other person that was running the tabletop event side of things.
Yeah.
How many people are involved in running this overall at this point?
Well, there's me, and then there's Greg Cares, who does the gaming. And then there's Ken Burnside, who runs the Ad Astra tabletop simulator. So he's got a really cool 3D space combat simulator, and he has a like a Traveler conversion. So it has like all the Traveler combat ships and stuff. And so he hosts what's it called? Squadron Strike Squadron. I'm talking too fast. Sorry. Squadron Strike Traveler. And you go over there, and I don't know if you ever played Starfleet Battles, but it's like a computerized online Starfleet Battles. You see your ship, you see the other guy's ship, you plot your course, you allocate energy to your different weapons, you hit the that you acknowledge that you end your turn, the computer moves everybody to the new positions, and firing happens, and it's really super cool. So really, it's me and then two other people who each kind of manage their own zones.
Super cool. No, I was not aware of that, so I'm gonna have to dig that up, and I will link that one as well here. Have you run into any like real challenges or stumbling points that you've learned from and would advise
Yeah, well,
folks
you always
against or about?
I do it live. So, well, it's they're pre-recorded interviews, but I host the show live, and so there's always like the mic's not on, the camera's showing the wrong thing. One year I clicked a button and started the interview over, and I couldn't go back to where I left off, so it threw the whole schedule out of whack. But this last year, since and then it went from like hosting a 2 or 3 hour show to last year it was 12 and a half hours. So this year, I did all the 17 interviews, and then I scheduled them to go off on their own, and then I just hung out in the chat and hosted them, and then we did some games, some live. I did like I hosted some Traveler game shows, and we did Pictionary and different kinds of funny things. Those are on my channel too, if you want to catch those are under the live tab. And yeah, we had a good time. So it ended up there was a lot more content, but I had to do a lot less work.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed getting the hang for the little bit that I was free this year. And the interviews were great. Hopefully next year I'll actually get to participate in some of the gaming. I assume we're doing it next year. Is that
Until I get tired of it or come up with an exit strategy, yeah, I'll continue.
fair? Fair enough. Well, let's talk about a couple of those other projects that you have.
Sure.
Some of them are much more coding focused. So you've got a number of irons in the fire here. You have a full video game that you're putting together, Cosmic Drifter. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So Cosmic Drifter was a Traveler inspired video game. And I kind of put a prototype together and put it out there to see if there was any interest, and there was interest, but I want people to be more interested. I'm trying to reach a certain number of I put up a user survey. And I want a certain number of surveys to come back before I actually put some more effort into that. But basically, what it is a JRPG style, like Final Fantasy kind of game, but with a traveler spin. And you start out as a drifter. You're the cosmic drifter. You're a drifter, and you're in a like a mining colony. You don't remember how you got there or what you're doing there, and you just try to figure out what's going on from there. And yeah, I wanted it to have kind of like a traveler character generation system, but since you already exist in the world, I kind of had to like retcon that. Like, how would that work? And so I figured, well, you go to like an employment computer, and it gives you an interview. You might have seen something like this kind of, and they do this in Starfield, but it asks you like, what was your first job? And you say, oh, or no, it asks you, where did you grow up? And you say, on this kind of planet. And that gives you a certain background skill. And then it said, well, what did you do for your, were you rich family, poor family, whatever? And so you choose that, and that gives you another skill. And then it asks you like, what was your first job? And so you pick, I was a scout, I was a whatever. And depending on your answer, that gives you some other skills. And so by the time you've answered this interview, you have your character. And I thought that kind of came across cool. And then I thought, well, it would be cool if there was like you have your ship, and it's like it'll be recognizable, but not Traveler because I didn't get a license, but it'll be traveler-ish, and you'd be able to upgrade your ship, fly around, explore, buy different kinds of weapons and armor and things, and run around and do missions and quests. And so that's something I'm thinking about maybe kickstarting, if I can get enough interest. So if folks are interested, go over to my website or just go to Google Cosmic Drifter, you'll find it.
Yeah,
And
I'll include a link to that in the description there.
awesome. Yeah, so if I can get up to like 100 responses or something, I'll revive that project. And because I would really like to see it I'd like to see it come to fruition. Put a lot of thought and work into it on the side, but I got to the point where I was like, okay, this is going to take a lot of work and a lot of focus, and I'm not going to be able to do other things while I'm working on this. So I want to make sure that it's going to have an, I don't want to spend a lot of time making stuff for myself, is stuff I used to do when I was a kid. Now I want to make stuff for other people, and I want people to use it. So I don't want to waste my time making something that I'm the only one who likes it. So, yeah, if people can go answer that survey, then I'll know more. Do you like it? Do you like movies like Aliens? Do you like, what are the things you like? What do you want to see in the game like this? What excites you about this game? What career? What would you like to be? A pilot, a mercenary, an entertainer, a professor, whatever. And so with that feedback, I'll be able to craft the game, more to specifically to the target audience, who is traveler players. But also people who just like video games that are like sci-fi. So,
Yeah.
that's where I'm
And
going with that.
while that's been shelved, you've been working pretty is it I don't know if it's exclusively, but pretty heavily on your virtual GM system.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I tend to bop around between different projects. Like, I'm working on a publication called the Jump Space Companion, and it's going to be an activity book of activities to keep you busy in jump space. And so there's crossword puzzles and word searches and alien Sudoku and things like that. And that's super hard to put that together. So I had to take a little break. And while I was doing that break, I was like, you know what? I need to kind of get organized because, like you said earlier, I have a lot of irons in the fire and my brain's kind of scattered on a lot of projects and it's hard to keep track of it all in your head. And so recently I sat down and I made like a game design kit for myself of templates for producing more stuff. So I made like a game design document template, a technical design document template, Kickstarter template, and Steam page template, and kind of put those in a package and then duplicated those out from my projects. And then I went back and I did like a brain dump on each of those things. And so when I was done with the one for my the virtual GM, which I ran into a technical snag back in December, and I kind of had to sidebar it while I was focusing on things I could do to make more to make money, because like when you're in publications, you got to put up all the work up front while you're not getting paid, and then hope that you can make money on the back end of that. And the same thing with programming. So unless you do something with a Kickstarter, which I'm not familiar with, but I'm gonna be looking into, you kind of gotta just do what you think you can do quickly and produce fast. So anyway, I put that project on the shelf while I was started working on the Jump Space Companion. So now, while I'm paused on the Jump Space Companion, and then I flip back to this, and I dump did my like brain dump into a game design document. I had an epiphany of what I had to fix to get the virtual GM to work again, and so I sat down one day and I had it fixed in like half a day, and once it started working. Not only was it fixed, but it was beyond where it was when I shelved it. And so I put out the word for alpha testers, and there's like 60 people signed up for it already. And people are in there testing it, and I'm modifying it. And basically, I got kind of like fascinated. People were talking about, oh, the AI is coming, we're all going to die, or AI is coming, my job. And as an artist, I don't want to lose my job to AI. So I was like, well, and actually, well, so I was like, I got to figure out how to use AI before I lose to AI. So I started experimenting with it. I was like, can this thing be a GM? Can it really, work as a GM? And so I did some experiments. I programmed some really like complex prompts. And they would work, but they would burn out. And I figured out why. And I fixed it. And now my new virtual GM is like super good. And it like it tra it never loses your story. It tracks your inventory. It doesn't forget what you're doing. Anyway, it works really well. So now I've got it up to the point where the testers are testing the like the placeholder test version, and they can start new games and continue games. What I have to do is what I'm working on now is loading previously saved games. Once that's done, I'm going to take the test AI. I have two AI engines, one called Spark, which is just like my test bed. It's just like a very basic storytelling bot. And then I have Vanguard, which is which is my more advanced actual like game. So and what it can do is it's what I want it to do is give you the feel of playing your favorite RPG game without the dice roll and without having to like rely on the mechanics. So it's really all about
Yeah, it's been doing this. It freezes and then
and
it's zoomed in. Again, Windows reinstall is happening.
yeah, anyway, so yeah, people are using it. It's and they're I'm getting feedback on it. It's being well received. It's doing it's performing better than I ever expected. And the things that I really like about it are like the different kinds of like emergent things. Like while we were testing it, we're like somebody was like fire a drone into the nebula. And so I was like, okay, so we fire a drone in the nebula. Okay. Now show me the control panel for the drone. And up it came. Press one to alter course, press two to scan the nebula, press three. And we were like blown away. And so, we ran a diagnostic on the thing and we set alarms for like certain conditions. And we were surprised to find out that the AI just went along with it and produced a really good adventure.
So
And,
are you viewing it as a GMing tool, or are you viewing it as like almost a text-based video game at this point?
it's a replacement GM
Okay.
for solo players. So it take you tell it, I want to do a fantasy adventure where I rescue a princess and I'm just a farmer named Joe. And that's how that starts out. And the virtual GM will tell you, you're a farmer named Joe, you're working your farm one day when a neighbor comes, crazily to your place telling you that your brother's been kidnapped by the evil sorcerer or whatever. And so then you just got to figure out, well, how am I gonna go rescue my brother? And so, you look around the farm, you find a dagger or whatever, and then you find clues to where the sorcerer is and you go after him. And the
So
game unfolds as you play.
you've designed this to be kind of genre agnostic at this point.
It's genre agnostic, yeah. So
Super
you
cool.
can w one time you sit down, maybe you want to do an H.P. Lovecraft story, and that, the next time you sit down, maybe you want to play Traveler. The next time, but it's since it's system agnostic, I want it to give you the feel of playing Traveler, but without the Traveler IP and without the Traveler mechanics. There's still mechanics behind the scene, but they're custom mechanics that I've developed through my experience as a GM over all these years. And really what it boils down to is the mechanics were kind of put in there to have to make rules and to kind of, what do I want to say, like structure storytelling. They're like an artifice put on top of the story. If you take that and then it ends up being like people trying to like get enough bonuses to beat a number and trying to do this like numeric challenge instead of a storytelling thing. And so once you take that out, then people can focus on the story. And instead of trying to add up bonuses and try to get the advantage that way, they're getting the advantage through storytelling. How am I going to gain the advantage on the dragon? Okay, I need a sword and I need some armor, but I'll still be like a baked potato. Like I need to get a wizard's ring, or I need to get some sort of companions to help me, or a way to find a chink in the dragon's armor, or whatever. So it becomes a yes, you can still kind of manipulate the story to your advantage, but you're not doing it on a onesies, twosies, minsies, maxies kind of thing. if you get my drift.
Yeah, and where do you feel like you are in the development process for this? Is it still early days, getting
Well,
closer?
it is early days, but once I get the it's moving very quickly. I already have the engine is my existing engine is to an advanced state, and it's ready to go. But I want to be able to have the minimum functions of being able to, you know, right now, if you start a new game, you can continue playing as long as you don't close the window or start another new game. The game gets saved every time you make a move, so everybody's games are stored in a database, and after I add in the function for loading those back in, they'll be able to access them and continue them. And then once that happens, I'll be ready to substitute the Vanguard engine, and Spark will be pulled out, Vanguard goes in, and then from there, it's going to be very fast through beta testing. Right now we're in alpha. We'll go very fast through beta testing because I have everything almost pretty much done. It was just this technical problem that we had that was vexing me, and now that's gone. So I think once I put in the features to load your games, it's going to go very quickly after that, and then to full commercial capacity or whatever. So I'm just going to roll it out and little by little, and see how it goes. So I want to make sure, like, you know, I can back up and restore everybody's data. I can you know I want to add a feature in where you can sh make up if you have a cool story, you can share it with the community, and they can upvote it or whatever, and maybe even make characters for it, because
Oh,
the
yeah.
characters are agnostic as well. So maybe like if I made a cool H.P. Lovecraft story, but my character was a professor, but you made one that's a cool mystic or a artist or something. You could maybe put that into like a catalog, and when people are playing that scenario, they can choose that character out of the catalog of characters.
I get,
So.
you know, I can see like the clear path for how this eventually evolves into like doing this in VR with it generating. I mean, we're how far away from a
Right. No,
holodeck?
not far. Not far. I mean, this engine could also make AI art through a DALL-E interface. So you could like save off your image of where you are now, or you know, things like that. I haven't integrated that, but that's a possibility down the line.
As someone that dabbles in solo RPG stuff, I think it's super cool.
Cool. Have you tried it
It's
yet?
no, I reserved a spot, but I think
Okay.
I mean I've used like OpenAI's ChatGPT just to mess around
Sure.
and test things out, and it's very cool. And you know, it keeps progressing. I haven't tried the new 4.0 model. I think that's what they call it,
Right.
but so
So
I'm
the
probably a
virtual
year behind on 3.5 or something like that.
Right. So the virtual game master uses the latest ChatGPT, the 4.0 model.
With just a minute or two here, did you want to plug your core game or
Oh,
virtual?
sure. Yeah, there's some other weird stuff I do. So there's like a there's a 3D scout ship you can run around in. I built that on a thing called Core Metaverse. It's like Roblox, but for grown-ups, put out by Epic. And yeah, I went to their game development, to their Core Academy boot camp, and learned how to use their stuff. And as my pro they had a game jam, and I made this game called The Crucible, which is kind of like I wanted it to be like Gauntlet but first person. And so it's like a dungeon crawl, so you can go and play that. And then after that, I made the virtual scout ship, so you can actually get on the scout ship and see how big it or small it is, run around in there.
See if the
If I
refresher
could.
actually fits in the room.
Yeah, exactly. No, the fresher does fit. And but the lounge and the workshop, I had to swap them, because once I saw how big they really were, it's like the crew lounge can't be this like little cramped hallway. You know, this is really where a workbench and a 3D printer could go, you know. Whereas across the hallway, which was supposed to be the workshop, I put in, you know, tennis, a table tennis thing, and some chairs and tables and a couch, and it's like a den. So anyway, and there is an armory, or there was an armory. My plan was to people could like run around and shoot each other in there, but it's too small of a space. And then somebody grabs the gun, and then the other people are without a gun, and then it's pretty bad. So anyway, if there's more interest, I'll make more ships and things to fight over and guns. So yeah.
Excellent. And one thing that I would want to promote for you, The Ultimate Guide to Playing Mongoose Traveler.
Oh yeah.
I gave it a read. You also have some blog posts about it. That is a good one for anyone that is just getting into Traveler
Yeah,
as a
thanks.
new player.
That was based on user feedback. So I wrote like 11 articles about Traveler and different aspects of it, and then somebody was like, "Oh, is this available as a book?" And I was like, And so yeah, so I basically took those articles, edited and expanded upon them, and then put them into that book format, and it's been very popular. So yeah, it's just my opinions about travel, about Mongoose Traveler, and how you can not optimize your game, but maybe things you didn't think about. So hopefully it's helpful, and hopefully people like it. It's
Yeah,
gotten
I
high
did.
reviews so far.
I thought it was great.
Oh, cool, great. All the art, I did all the art in there is AI generated. Well, I don't ever post anything that's straight out raw out of the AI's butt. So the all my AI art goes through Photoshop. I touch it up. I get rid of the extra fingers. I fix the eyes. So there is artistic, application on top of that. Anyway, so and I'm pretty proud about how it came out. So yeah, hope people enjoy it.
They can't get mad because you didn't put yourself out of business as an artist.
Yeah,
So,
exactly. When I make AI art, no artist loses money.
love it. Well, why don't we wrap things here, Frank?
Right.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I'll put all these links in the description for the video and the audio. And if you think of anything else that we didn't get to include that you just want to pop in there, just let me know, and
Okay,
we'll make it
cool.
happen.
Great. Thanks, Barry.